We'll turn to Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada. First of all, Elliot, good afternoon. Good morning.
Good afternoon. Depending
on where people are listening. Calgary and Vancouver. Let's start with the Vancouver Canucks and get into the Calgary Flames here in a couple of seconds. If we have time, I want to get into the return of Tuukka Rask and the future of the New York Islanders. But the Vancouver Canucks, and most specifically, the Vancouver Canucks and Elias Pettersson, what jumped out at you last night about their franchise player?
Well, I think to me, it's the second time they've done something a little interesting with Pettersson, and they've made sure to say that it's his kind of decision, or that he had influence on it, or that he requested it. Pettersson is really struggling right now. No Canuck fan needs me to tell him that. It's not exactly a genius comment. And, you know, we said yesterday that I think that's Vancouver's number one thing right now. I mean, obviously, people are looking at the standings. They've had a couple of losses. How much does this cost them in the race? I almost think that's actually a secondary question. To me, the number one thing that the Canucks have to be looking at internally is, how do we get this guy going? What do we need to do here? And, you know, some of that falls on, or a lot of that actually falls on Pettersson himself. To be a great player in this league, you have to be a self-starter, and you have to do a lot of it yourself. But it's also about, can the organization put you in good positions? Can the organization give you the support you need? Can the organization put you in positions to succeed? And if you'll remember, the first game where Boudreau took over, Pettersson was killing penalties. And what did he come out and say after the game? Well, Pettersson is asked about doing that. So we wanted to say, okay, we're going to involve you and you're going to do that. So Pettersson is still struggling. He's on the wing last night. And I know that, you know, the hockey's a lot more positionless than it used to be, but there are still some things here and there. I know the Canuck fans were curious about that last night. I saw the chatter that he was on the wing with Horvat as opposed to playing center. And then when Boudreau was asked about it after the game, you know, what does he say? He says, well, you know, he's talked about playing the wing before. And that says to me that the Canucks are in a phase right now that they are saying internally, we know we have to get this guy going. And also, we know that if you know, Vancouver's a market because it's a hot hockey market. If you drop any ounce of criticism, people are going to run wild with it because that's what we do in Canada, right? So I think the interesting thing to me, Jeff, is they know he's struggling. They've got to get him going. And everything they're doing to try something different is phrased as, well, you know, Pettersson's wanted to do it. And so what it says to me is they're trying to be supportive. They're trying to say, Elias, you know, we got to get you going here. And, you know, what would you like to do? How can we help you? It's, you know, that's what's going on here is the Canucks are trying to involve Pettersson or create the appearance of Pettersson being involved in this. So it's a collaborative thing. And it doesn't give license for everybody to dump all over him even more than they're already going to because his production isn't there. I find
soft
that
landing.
Really,
soft,
yeah, like
soft
they
landing.
Have to get him going. It's not even about making the playoffs in terms of them making the playoffs with him. It's you just have to know that this you're counting on this guy to be your franchise cornerstone for 11 billion years. Like you're thinking you're signing him well past this extension. You have to get him going because your path to success is so much more difficult if he's not being who he can be.
Sure. And that's a 3-year deal at $7.3 million on the AAV. And to your point, he's, you know, you look about, you know, building Stanley Cup teams right down the middle. He's your top dog. He's the guy that this thing is built around up front. Pause on the Vancouver Canucks. Calgary Flames as well.
That was a bad one last night.
They looked lifeless. They came out, and listen, full credit to the Ottawa Senators, full credit to Nick Paul, full credit to Matt Murray. Congratulations on picking up that win and making those saves. But Calgary came out flat. I mean, Lucic tried to get it going, you know, going at Scott Sabourin in a pretty spirited bout, but even still, nothing. Like, there was a whole lot, there wasn't a whole lot of there. Yesterday for the Calgary Flames. How do you read their situation?
Well, first of all, you mentioned Nick Paul. What do you think the market's going to be for him at the deadline this year?
I'm UFA. Really biased because I've liked Nick Paul going back to when Stan Butler had him in junior. I have all day for Nick Paul, and he's the one guy that continues every season to get better and better and better and refine his game. I got all day for Nick Paul.
Curious to see what Ottawa's going to do. If they try to keep him, or they're going to get good offers for him. You know, it's an easy contract to handle. It's the AAV there is what 1.35. Yeah, yep. I think that's going to. Anyway, you asked about Calgary, and I know people are in Calgary are like, stop talking about Nick Paul and talk about the Flames.
But here's the thing, you know, Nick Paul looks like he does look like a Calgary Flames type player though. Like, you know, we play the where does this guy belong game. Like, could you not see Nick Paul playing for the Calgary Flames? I could.
Oh yeah, I could see him playing for a lot of teams, but definitely Calgary too. You look at the salary certainly fits there. That's for sure.
Yep.
I look at Calgary last night, and you know, I went back and I watched Sutter's presser. And, you know, he's not exactly subtle, right? You know, when you want to know what he's thinking, he'll tell you what or if he wants you to know what he's thinking, he's going to make sure. And, you know, how many times do you use the word emotion and how many times do you use word emotion without it really being brought up to him? And he thought they flatlined last night. And, you know, some people will say, oh, okay, well, Calgary hasn't played in a while, da 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 da. You know, sometimes you come out flat. Well, as you said, Ottawa hasn't played in a long time, and they charged out of the gate last night. So that's not an acceptable excuse to use. You know, for the first time this year, like Calgary has been really good all year. They had that bad road trip last week, and this is probably the first time all year they're really looking at it. You're really looking at it, and you're saying, or at least the first time in a long time, you're looking at it and you're saying, okay, do we have a problem here? You know, where exactly are we going? I still like their math. Their math is good in terms of the Pacific Division, but you can't have games like that one. Like when you look back at the end of the season, if you miss the playoffs or you don't like your playoff positioning, even though no matchups are easy, you're going to look at that game and you're going to say, boy, that's one of the ones we couldn't have had. And I think the other thing too is that if I know Sutter, he's going to be furious that Lucic did that and it didn't really help them at all. The team didn't rally because he's going to say that, and you know, I saw Ryan Leslie tweet out the picture of Lucic's hands. You know, he's going to say that Lucic did that to try to get us going and none of you responded. And a guy like Sutter, he'll be really pissed off about that. That will really bother him.
That's a tough one for the Calgary Flames. And now they've got a little bit of a break here. Like, they're not playing again. Like, the Vegas game on Saturday was postponed, as we all. They don't play again until Tuesday against the Florida Panthers. So they've got some time to work on things if you're the Calgary Flames.
Think we could
get
the old no-puck practice?
Oh, down and back, down and back, down and back, down and back. Wagging tongues. Get the water off the benches, too. Make them grind it out.
I wonder if you get that out of this.
Daryl Sutter's an old school guy. Sutter's an old school coach. I don't think that would surprise anybody.
If I was a player, I'd be like, uh-oh. You know, I forgot about that. You mentioned that. You know, we got a bunch of days off, and he didn't like that. What are we going to get here?
There's going to be one punishment skate in there. There's going to be one a corrective skate, as we call it in the
industry. Can't call it punishment anymore.
No, that's right. We're correcting.
We're not punishing. We're correcting.
No, we're correcting. The return of Tuukka Rask. It was interesting. I'm not sure how much of the Boston Philly game you watched yesterday, but
quite a bit.
You
know, it's,
okay, so you saw the beginning. Did you not get the sense that the fans in Boston were dying to chant Tuukka, but they had to wait for 10 minutes until Boston finally conceded a shot, and it was already 2-0 as David Pastrnak had two of what turned into a hat trick. What did you make of Tuukka Rask, the return of Tuukka Rask, the comments after by the players, and geez, what the Boston Bruins are doing right now?
Well, I mean, that game, first of all, I thought that game was going to end 10-0. I'm sure I'm not the only one who thought that. When Pastrnak scored the two early. And you know what? There was one play, and I remember watching it, because I'm watching both Vancouver and Boston at that time. Philly, when it was 2-0 and Pastrnak already had two goals,
Philly almost had another
penalty in Boston. Yeah, there was a great cross seam pass he just couldn't get his stick on. And if he gets his stick on that, and we all know he's talented enough to do it, he's got a natural hat trick 7 minutes into the game.
Yeah, crazy. He's not even shot on goal, and he's got 3 goals for the Bruins. I know that would have been wild. There was the one that he fired wide too. He didn't get all of the puck. Like Pasternak could have had 4 or 5 last night.
Yes, he could have. So I give Philly some credit at least for battling back. But you know, Boston, they're a steamroller right now. There's no question about that. You know, on the pod today, we talked about all-star snubs, and we both talked about Crosby and we talked about Zegras. I still think that both those players could end up there as replacements potentially, although neither one of them is last man in guys. Marchand, I think, you know, I don't get worked up about all-star snubs. I'm sorry. I just don't.
Nor do I.
If we're going to have the conversation, Marchand is probably a guy too that you'd look at and say deserves to be there. But, you know, Rask last night, I have to say that you can tell that his teammates really like him, eh?
You see them talk about him after?
First of all, I thought he looked really good. The first goal that beat him was a beautiful goal, like a tip. What are you going to do? He had his glove on it, and the tip beat him. You know, what are you going to do? And, you know, the second goal, he looked a bit annoyed with himself, but, you know, it was a great chance. I thought he was really good. I'm sure the Bruins feel great. You can tell his teammates really like him. And, the Bruins, you know, they're really going right now. I'm really curious to see what they're going to add, but they look really good. Even though, you know, McAvoy, he hasn't been as great as he can normally be lately. I'm assuming he'll just figure that out. But they look. The one thing about last night's game I really liked too is, you know, 2 nights ago in the Montreal game that we did, we found out the story about the hat that Brad Marchand says that one player picks up the hat. I thought ESPN, which was the broadcaster last night, they did a really great thing that they followed Pasternak after the hat trick goal to see which hat he would choose.
And then
they showed him handling it to I didn't see if it was the equipment person or the trainer, and he handed it to them to take back. I thought that was really good. I thought that was really good TV work. I thought it was really well done.
I thought it was. Now here becomes one of my questions. The New York Islanders won 3-2 last night in overtime against the New Jersey Devils. 3-0 in their last three. Matthew Barzal scores. He's got points in his last 9 games. 14 points in his last 9 games. He's heating up here. No J.G. Pageau last night. No Sebastian Aho. They both became fathers on the same day. Ryan Pulock in LTIR and COVID protocol, along with the head coach, Kyle Palmieri, is on IR. The Islanders start next. They're 10 of their next 11 games at home.
Yeah.
They're chasing Washington for third. They have this 21-point swing there. Chasing Boston for a wild card. There's a 16-point swing there. But the thing is, the Islanders have only played 29 games so far this season. It's hard. Hang on. It's hard. This is an uphill climb. But every now and then...
You know what you're like
Ottawa,
right now?
Listen, what? I'm like St. Jude, the patron saint of lost causes. That's what I'm like right now.
Well, I wasn't going to say that, although it's a good reference. I was going to say, like, I remember as a kid watching some football game and it was like 40-0 after the third quarter. And the commentator's like, the Broncos are famous for their comebacks. Don't turn away, everybody. You know, it's ridiculous. Anyway, I admire what you're trying to do. I do. Like, you know, Rogers really thanks you for your service here, for trying to promote there's still a race in the Eastern Conference.
Yes,
the problem is, Jeff, as you say, the Islanders are 16 points behind Boston, but they've got only 5 games in hand. So even if they go 5-0 and you pick any 5 of Boston's games, they're still, you know, they're still 6 points out.
I've still got, you know, memories of the Hamburglar, and I got memories of Binnington, and you're waiting for it to happen again in the NHL because it does every now and then. Like, I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not even saying, to your point, it's logical. But if there's anyone that you could see making a game of it, is it not the Islanders?
I see. You saw Clockwork Orange, right? Which is one of my favorite movies.
My lovely debauchees. Of course, I saw that.
I good reference. I see you as under the mind control, the brainwashing device of Lou Lamorello at the helm.
Lovely, lovely.
Still Ludwig, make the playoffs.
Ludwig von. You have my eyeballs propped open with toothpicks.
And they're putting the eye drops in there.
I get it.
Jeff,
I know.
The Islanders will still make the playoffs. Look, I hope they make it interesting. I do. It makes the games more exciting. There's no question about that, but the math is already not their friend.
Okay. I think it was you on Twitter last night that said the Buffalo Sabres were going to beat the Nashville Predators in Nashville, right? That was you. You predicted that one. You saw that one?
Yes.
Who saw the Sabres beating the Preds like that? Jeff Skinner with a pair of 4-1 as the final score. Hey, it's hockey. These things kind of happen. If I'm the Nashville Predators, I just chuck it away. Nashville-Boston tomorrow at 1 o'clock Eastern. That looks like it's going to be a really good game. Preds, despite what happened last night, have been playing some great hockey. And we just talked about the Boston Bruins. What do you do with the Nashville Predators here? Because we're all waiting for it to explode, and it hasn't. We're waiting for it to cave in. It hasn't. No. We're waiting for performance to drop. It hasn't. Like, you remember in 2006 when, you know, the Carolina Hurricanes had that great start and we all said, okay, well, that's kind of cute. They're having a nice little start here. And then it didn't stop. And then Rutherford started adding pieces. And next thing you know, Eric Staal is holding the Stanley Cup and there's Glenn Wesley and, you know, there's Cam Ward, et cetera. And we all said, wow, how did that happen? I'm not saying Nashville's going to win the Stanley Cup, but are you ready to call them legit, like capital L legit here, Elliot?
I think they've earned it, absolutely. Despite last night, I think they've earned it. The other thing, too, is I think that Saros has answered any questions about himself as a goalie, right?
Yeah.
The Vezina vote this year, which is done by the GMs, you know, to me, Vasilevsky could win it every year. And he might be – he might quietly be the most valuable player in the league, but – he could win it every year, but, you know, Saros to me this year, he's, you know, I thought he got shafted in the voting last year. And then there's the guy you picked who stole another game last night.
He goes Shesterkin and comes back from COVID and throws a bagel out there. Oh yeah.
And a game where the Rangers were really outchanced. And, you know, so yeah, I do think Nashville's legit. I think they've earned the right to be called legit. I mean, Yossi's having another ridiculous season. And, you know, guys who haven't been great for them in the past are having really good years. And, you know, the other thing, too, is they've given themselves bank, right? Like, if you look at that Central Division, those top three teams there, it's going to be really tough for any of them to get knocked out. They're in too good a position.
You know, one of the things we talked on the most recent pod that just came out this morning is, you know, the Nashville Predators, your David Poile. What's happening with Philip Forsberg? Is this extension time for Philip Forsberg? Do you just say to yourself, okay, we're not signing him, you know, to a max long-term deal here. We're going to just ride it out with Forsberg and see what happens by the end of the season and see how far we can take this thing. You know, you're David Poile here, Elliot. What are you doing with Philip Forsberg?
You know, it's funny, Jeff. I'm glad you actually mentioned that because the podcast dropped about an hour and a half ago and somebody called me and said that there's a bunch of teams out there who aren't selling, who have basically said, now, I don't know that Nashville's one of them. I don't know where that's going to go. But there's a bunch of teams out there that aren't selling who've basically said, we're going to punt our decisions till after the season. You know, the players know that we're not selling and – so there's no point in really gumming up the works here. I think the other thing too is, and you know, you think this doesn't matter, but it really does matter. That extra $1 million that everybody's kind of wondering about, you know, a month ago, the commissioner is saying, look, we think we're going to eliminate this debt in two years after this. And therefore the cap will go up $1 million. Well, we didn't have the Omicron issue at that time. Now look at everything. Look at what's happened with the Canadian. You know, Toronto's already played two home games with no fans. That's $7 million that we're never getting back. And, you know, I think everybody's wondering now, are we really going to have this extra million? And it matters. It absolutely matters. So I think you might see, and I'm not saying that specifically with Forsberg. Like, I think if this continues to go this way with Nashville, I don't know how the Predators can't find a way to get that done. He's too important and they're doing too well. If you were having a losing season, I think you could say, okay, but when you're doing as well as you are this year, and he's such a big part of that, I think you have to find a way to get it done. But I know a lot, like someone was telling me that there's a number of teams that are kind of punting their decisions until A, they see how they do in the playoffs, and B, they know if they've got this extra $1 million or not.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned UC Saros, because if you rewind to last season, what was the story? Nashville's done. They've taken it as far as they can. They had their hurrah. They got to the Stanley Cup final. They bowed out against the Pittsburgh Penguins. They're coasting on the fumes of that run, and it's time to rebuild it. And it seemed as if Nashville themselves were committed to that, right? Like, how many times did we speculate about, you know, Matias Ekholm becoming a Philadelphia Flyer? Like, it was almost weekly on the podcast that we were talking about that. And then UC Saros, to your point, said, get on my back. You know, I'm only 5'11", but let's see how much of this team I can fit on my back, and we're going to make the playoffs. And then all that trade talk went away. Now, they did make some moves in the offseason, but they still iced a competitive team. Like, they've gone, you know, from one season to the next to being on the precipice, Elliot, of completely blowing it up right now to a position where, you know, they're amongst the top teams in the NHL. There's some players that are going to be up for individual awards. You mentioned UC Saros. You want to throw Roman Josi into the conversation as well, for Defenseman of the Year. You know, inside of two seasons, they've gone from we're going to blow this thing up to we got to re-sign all these guys. And to me, it's because of one guy, UC Saros. 5'11", 180 pounds.
I would say he's the main guy, but there's a guy wearing number 59 who I think is a big part of that too. Although
no doubt,
Saros
Josi's been fantastic. And once again, he's going to be in the conversation for the Norris. But to me, what Saros has done, like, I think that you can, it may sound weird, you can win the heart as a goaltender, but not win the Vezina. As
well,
bizarre as that may sound.
Two different groups of people voting, right? Because the media votes for the heart and we're all smart, and the GMs vote for the Vezina and they're all dumb.
Hang on. I will say one thing. Brian Burke always makes the point that it's stupid for GMs to vote for the Vezina because the goaltender is the position they screw up on the most. And Berkey has always made that. He's like, why do we vote on this award? That's the one position we screw up with regularity, and they make us vote on it. We don't deserve to vote for the goaltender of the year. We screw that position up, all of us, all the time. It is pretty.
Well, I'll say something else to you too. There are some GMs who have privately accused other GMs of skewering their ballots to make sure that their guys do better, right?
I have a hard time believing that.
If anybody would believe that, first and foremost. I remember one years ago, I heard it on the most was, do you remember the year the late Ray Emery was 18-0 was the backup in Chicago or something like that?
He
got a vote. And someone, I can't remember the whole situation. He got a voter, or some votes, or maybe even a first place vote. And so another GM was mad because he's like, Emery isn't even the starter. How can you give him the vote? And it kind of screwed over his guy. Yeah. So he was really mad about that.
You know what my favorite one was, Elliot, of that about votes was the year the GM of the Year award was first introduced, now named appropriately enough the Jim Gregory. That was the year that Dale Tallon was fired as general manager of the Chicago Blackhawks. But remember how the Blackhawks went on and they ended up winning the Stanley Cup. And I can't remember who actually won the GM of the Year award, but Dale Tallon got one vote. And he wasn't even a GM at that point. Like, there was one GM that was just so PO'd that Dale Tallon, maybe it was how it was done. I don't know. We all know it was Game of Thrones in Chicago for a number of years.
Yeah.
Maybe they were just PO'd about how it was done, Elliot, that someone voted for Dale Tallon, even though technically he wasn't a GM at that point.
I've
made it one of my lifelong missions to try to find out who voted for Dale Tallon.
Well, you've uncovered some good things last couple of days. Like, you know, you were right. I think you're right about the whole Hextall-Clark Lewis thing. Oh, and by the way, I meant to tell you, I think your thing the other day about the Tory Krug thing is true, that he leaves the one puck for Krug.
Come on, really? You got to take me to casino, Freach. Come on, man.
I would have to hang out with you away from the show, and I've got no desire to do that.
I know you don't have to. Okay, so that thing, by the way, that Elliot is talking about is I was sent a tip from someone that on the puck pyramid on the boards, when the Boston Bruins come out, Brad Marchand always knocks all the pucks over, but he leaves one. And someone tipped me off and said, it's a tribute to his former teammate, Tory Krug. And I don't know whether he misses Tory Krug, but that's his nod to Tory Krug.
Apparently that is true. Yep. Someone was listening to the show yesterday who would know and sent me a note and said that is accurate.
Huh. All right. I'm on a hot streak then. I'm just going to take the rest
you
of the day off.
Fire.
Elliot, I'm going to put my feet up here.
I think our producer. I think you should.
For the sake of everybody's eardrums in Toronto, Vancouver, and Calgary, I'll do them all the favor. All right. We'll watch for you on the Magic Eyeball on Hockey Night tomorrow, Freach. You're released.
All right, buddy. Take good care.